Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, The Cultural Christ, we will explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our culture impacts faith. Now for part two of this interview. For those that are like earlier on in the journey of back to who we are culturally, and I think it happens from a majority culture, dominant culture perspective, like there is the journey back to who we are. And yeah. Also from a minority culture perspective, how many years, like what are we looking at in terms of that formation? And are there any other moments that were super meaningful along the way?
Yeah. So, I mean, well, what I described of like kind of that whole like egg or, you know, cracking open while I was doing ministry in Germany. I mean, I think, you know, I just really genuinely cared for the people that we were working with. And it felt, I think just as a person, it felt so, you know, not genuine to be saying something and always feeling like, but I'm not actually sure I fully believe that for myself. Yeah. And so, I mean, that was like a moment, but then it's been really slow since then. I don't know about years. I am a very slow processor. I'm a slow as a sloth like type of person. And so I think it's going to look different, you know, and it's going to be different depending on the type of support someone has, you know, what relational like situation they're in and how supportive that is. For me, it was very slow, but there were a lot of moments and I felt very much like God kind of just brought them, you know. There were really meaningful moments later on in my relationship with Matt and just, you know, where I still would be hiding and, you know, he wouldn't really let me hide and he didn't really know like the extent of everything, but there were situations like that. So I feel like it came up in relationship. There was always the opportunity to assimilate and hide. It's so strong that it's real easy to do, but then there's always an opportunity, I think, to like go in a different direction, but it can be a lot harder. It takes a lot of courage. And so I feel like there was one thing after another like that. So over the course of, I mean, decades, really, another huge thing that helped, I think, was being introduced to just diverse stories. So I talk about this a lot, and that was in college. And then later, just as I looked into, you know, different books to read. So just all of a sudden realizing there's this wide world out there. And I can find more, like more language, more words for what I felt for so long in these stories. And so that was another huge piece, I think, that, you know, kind of helped me name some of the things and process through some of the things that were going on and then, you know, kind of receive and be able to walk back through embrace of who I am and who God made me to be. So I don't know about time-wise.
Yeah. All of life. I know. It wasn't like started this year and ended this year. I know. Right.
Right.
I want to explore your understanding of Jesus and who Jesus is to you. It started off with a white Jesus on the television screen with your mom, and how beautiful to develop a sensitivity towards Christ, even if the images aren't truthful to the text of scripture and who Jesus is historically. So what was that journey for you in learning who Jesus is historically, and who is Jesus to you? You know, like, why are you drawn to Christ? Why do you follow Jesus? And yeah, help us understand.
Well, so I think I did a Beth Moore Bible study in college. So this is like another classic little, you know, nudge. Yeah. And it was about Jesus. And all I remember from it, because I was weeping like in some coffee shop on campus. But all I remember about it was reading her description of what we could assume he maybe looked like. And her description was dark skin. And she said coarse, dark hair. Of course, you know, she's just pulling together things, you know, about where he was from and that area of the world. And I just was crying because I had never heard him described like that. And, you know, my hair is getting whiter as I get older, but my hair was very black and that's how it always was and very coarse. And so even to feel like, yes, we're totally different cultures, but to feel like, oh my gosh, it could be something like me or my mom, like, or, you know, like that, just, it would like broke some floodgates open. So I think that was really significant for me, and to start imagining him as a human being in a very specific culture, it was really powerful, always really powerful. But yeah, I mean, I think just anything I've ever read about Jesus, starting from, you know, or anything what I've ever been told about Jesus has been just so wonderful. You know, it sounds so cheesy to say that, but I mean, I just, his way of welcome, his way of loving others, like the fact that he's always going to the margins. And then in my own life, I think when I started processing through all of this, I started to imagine, and this was me using my imagination, but I feel like it was very much a spiritual exercise of imagining Jesus with me. So as I'm going back and trying to learn how to cook something in Korean that I had rejected, or learning how to make kimchi, eating it at the table, but imagining him with me, that was really transformative for me, and feeling like, yes, that is the kind of Jesus he is. He would sit, he would eat with me. Wow. He wouldn't mind having kimchi breath. Like it, these little things were like really, it just really changed just my experience of intimacy with Jesus and who Jesus is. And then it's just kind of flipped everything as I started to read scripture with new eyes, you know, feeling like this is the Jesus he is in scripture, and this is the Jesus he would be with me. Yeah. Well, I don't know if that answers your question, but just everything about him. So.
Let's move to parenting, which is always such a complex question with the intersections of culture and what we tell our kids and the implicit or explicit ways that we form them in our culture or away from it on acts, all those things. So what has it been like as a mom in your household, along with your husband, to teach them about cultural identity? One thing you mentioned at the beginning was, it wasn't like cultural identity was taught. I mean, that phrase, like, it really hasn't, honestly, it hasn't been around very long anyways.
Right.
And so this is fairly new in the way that Christians talk about themselves, because even the word culture hasn't been around for a really long time. So what is creating that in your home look like? What is celebrating culture or talking about it? What are the conversations? What are the funny things that have happened? Help us understand kind of that.
You know, a lot of my parenting journey, our parenting journey has lined up with this kind of like my journey of embracing, going back and embracing a lot of what I had rejected or hidden for so long. And so I feel like from the beginning, they have just watched me fumble through that. It has been very clumsy. They have watched me trying to like make something and messing the whole thing up and throwing it in the trash. You know, there's been a lot of that. And so I feel like what they've seen is really different. They have seen, you know, my mom come in and be like, what are you doing? You know? So, I mean, even just that relational dynamic of like how things are passed down and how they get botched up along the way. A lot of that they've kind of just watched as they've grown older. And they all respond to it very differently. Our oldest, like he's just kind of like his taste, but it seems like he's always used to eating Korean food. He kind of is drawn in that direction. Our middle guy, it's a little different. There are things that he likes and things that he just doesn't like at all. You know, I mean, it's just, I just feel like watching them is really interesting. For us, we've just tried, I've really tried to just bring whatever I can and make it available, whether that's like resources or books, like kids' books, anything I can find. Also like food, but then have also just tried to be really honest about it. And tried, it's so hard not to do this, but tried to just let them have their own journey, like bring resources, be there to talk through things, but let them have their own journeys, because they're all really different and they're experiencing things so differently than I did. Even just the way that they're going through school, the things that are happening in their schools, the conversations are so different. And then our youngest is adopted. And so she's adopted from Korea. And so with her, it's really different. I mean, from the beginning, we've tried really hard, and it's a little easier because we have access to Korean culture and it's a part of, you know, our family. But we've always tried to make sure that that was very much available, like foods, whatever she liked before she came, which was only, you know, a little bit of time. And it's uncanny to me. And obviously this is just our experience, but how she is always drawn to it. Like if she's given the option, she always wants kind of like what she was born with.
Wow.
Which is uncanny to me. And I'm just like, it's ethnicity is, and I always say this, that's forever. It's something woven into her. And so, yeah, we could just strip it, but the fact that it's always offered is, it just, it's really interesting to watch her. So we just went to Korea for her for the first time, you know, took her back since she came. And it was really wild to watch her just like kind of skipping through the street saying things like, I love every smell. Like, you know, not just this food smell, like, don't you love everything here? Don't you want to live here? And I'm like, wow, like that love has probably always been there, you yeah. know, and it can be nurtured or it can be kind of not. But anyway, so, but all of them, their journeys have been really different. So it's been fun to watch. It's been hard at times. It's been hard to see like some of them struggle trying to figure out who they are, and just yeah. receive things from others, you know, because they all look really different too. Some of them look a lot more Asian, and other one of our guys looks like he looks white, and he gets told a lot by others, you know, you're not Asian. And so it's confusing. So I just try to keep reiterating what's true, but also giving them some space, which is really hard for me because I, you know, just want to fix everything, but I can't. So
yeah. What is church community look like in this season, and how does culture map onto that or not? I mean, as a parent, it's a complex math problem related to what church community and faith community should look like. And like cultural identity preference is like one thing amidst right. a bunch of things. Like, are there healthy leaders? Do we like the way they read the Bible and theology and whatever? So I guess what has that been like for you?
It's been really hard for me. You kind of hit the nail on the head with just the fact that, I mean, there are five of us. And so there are five things to consider, as well as like our family unit, you know, as a communal thing. But we have been a part of a church that we love. It is a family to us. The demographics that we're in, it's a very white church, and most of the churches around us are that. And so it's been interesting kind of feeling like, gosh, is this, I think I get worried like, oh, are people going to be saying the same things to my kids that I received? It's a different environment, and we love the people that we're with, but yeah, it hasn't been easy for me. There have been especially different seasons where I've felt like, oh gosh, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know if this is the right place for us. And it wasn't even because it was a bad place, you know, or there was something huge. It was just feeling like, does this fit us in our cultural identity? And that doesn't feel like something that I know how to answer very well. Still, we love our community. We love the people there. We do love how there has been space made for cultural identity. Yeah, imperfectly, but there has, you know, been space made for that. But yeah, it doesn't feel like something I can tie up with a bow. Yeah. So yeah, it's been mostly hard, and sweet too. So
what would you tell to your younger self, and what would you tell to younger followers of Jesus who are realizing that they need to explore their cultural roots and heritage for a number of reasons? And they're in that kind of early disorienting stage of, what does this mean about faith and church and the Bible and my friends and my parents? And what advice would you have for them or your younger self?
Well, one, that you don't have to figure everything out right away. And I think that the world that we're living in would tell you from all different angles that you have to have it figured out. You know, you need to know what you think about everything right away. And I don't think that kind of hurried pressure just makes it worse. So I think you don't have to have it all figured out right away, but pay attention to your body, pay attention to what your body's telling you when you feel uncomfortable, you know, pay attention to what you're feeling, like when you feel like you're experiencing a little homecoming or safety, you know, whether that's in community or at the table eating something, pay attention to those things, that they really matter. I think a lot of it, or at least in my experience, I was told that those things don't matter, you know, like this disconnection from my body, this disconnection from these little things that feel really important to me. So I would say pay attention to those things and let them lead you towards Jesus, because I think they do. And I think that that's why they're there. Yeah, probably those two things. I think there's a lot more I could say, but I think that's really important, especially if it's kind of new, because I think it feels like you have to figure everything out. You have to say everything, let everyone know everything. And it's okay to be tender with yourself and to kind of move through that at your own pace.
We got to talk about your authorship. I don't even know if that's a word.
I
You're a
don't
writer,
know
right?
either.
So, but it sounds like one. It sounds like a really good word. Talk about your writing and book projects. We'd love to hear some of what you put out in the world.
Yeah, I mean, so I just released my first book, late in the game. I'm a late bloomer, last May. So, I have written for a lot of compilation books, through Encourage, who I write for. And then also recently there was Voices of Lament that was edited by Natasha Sistrunk Robinson. I have a poem there, but my first like full book that's all, all my words is, yeah, Tell Me the Dream Again. And it's a memoir and essays. And I actually started it in a memoir class in college, so decades ago, but couldn't
Wow.
finish it because I just hadn't lived enough yet. And so it's a continuation of that. And yeah, writing is just the way it's kind of like I have always been a writer and happen to be an author now too, but just have always written. And that's always the way I've kind of processed pain. And it is, yeah, just the way that I process most things, actually. So,
What was the compilation process and putting everything together and also writing some more? What was that like for you in terms of your own journey? Because in a way it's you're a very talented journaler. You're very talented, somebody who's capturing what they have to say along the journey. What was that like for you in your own learning, besides the pressure of the ridiculous complex of publishing and hoping people buy the book, all the things that are less important. What was your spiritual practice in doing that? What did it produce?
I mean, I think it helps. It helped me learn to listen to myself. So that, I mean, from way back when I was young, it helped me learn to listen to myself. This book, I mean, when I started it a long time ago, it was very much like, I don't know what I'm going to write about, because this memoir class, we had to write this little piece of a memoir after reading these memoirs that were like, about huge life experiences. And we're like these young college students. And I'm like, I haven't been through anything. I don't have anything to write about. But then it felt like there was this story that was very connected to my mom that was burning inside, like it wanted to come out. So I think even just listening to that and letting it come out onto the page or in the computer or whatever, that process, I think, has just helped me to kind of trust my feelings and then release them. So whether that's in a journal and it's just going to stay in the journal because there's a lot of that, or it's releasing them and deciding to share it and feeling like this is a way of hospitality for me. This is a way of like choosing to kind of use words to welcome people in, or welcome their own stories in. And so it definitely has been the spiritual practice of just listening to myself, inviting God into that, releasing it, but then also using it, as a way of hospitality.
Well, thanks for sharing. Everybody, go pick up the book. It's incredible. Thank you for bringing that to the world and excited for whatever is next. We haven't talked about writing projects, but
Yeah.
I definitely hope there's some stuff in the future. Thanks for being on the Cultural Christ.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.